This is DreamWords. Tom Corvin by Paul Story. Chapter 8. Catriana was her name, his angel. She moved quickly, with the confidence of a general. If she'd let him, the boy could easily have collapsed in an exhausted bag of bones as soon as the door slammed behind them. But her brisk efficiency and her courage infected him like a drug. For some reason, he did not want to seem weak in her presence, and perhaps, for the sake of that same reason, keen to follow her orders. They set the injured man on a settee at the back of the house on the ground floor, and as Catriana removed the life jacket, the waterproofs, and cut the trousers from his bad leg, she told the boy to light a fire. "The cold'll kill him, not the leg," she said. By the time the fire raged in the grate, the man was down to a pair of white Daffy Duck boxers, and the girl rubbed him furiously with an enormous tartan towel. He tried to speak, but every time his mouth opened, the pain flew from his body in a plaintive groan that would have terrified a ghost.
"Shh," she whispered. "Save your strength."
And then to the boy she barked, "The kitchen. Boil some water. Hot drinks." By the time he did so, and returned with three mugs of sweet tea, she had somehow managed to dress him in a dry fleece and woolen long johns and got him into a bed in the far corner of the room. The boy handed her a tea. She looked at the steam rising from the brown liquid, brought her face close to the rim, and pulled back sharply.
"It's too hot."
He obediently retreated to the kitchen, ran some cold water into the mugs, and returned to her side. She held the warm drink to the man's chattering lips and nodded her approval as he gulped the heap back into his body. Next, she pushed back a corner of the duvet and examined his leg, all the time whispering to him in a manner that the boy thought was meant to exclude him. Was she keeping him busy to keep him away? When he tried to give the girl a mug of her own, she nodded her head towards a table and he dutifully placed it there. He was just about to ask if he could help, when she spoke with singular and abrupt efficiency.
"Through the front room. The drawers on the right, you'll find a dry set of clothes. Take what you need."
"What about..." He was going to ask her about herself. She was as wet as he was. Her long hair separated into dripping strands of licorice. But she cut him off.
"Just do it."
And then she softened.
"I'll be fine. Dry yourself and change."
The boy did as he was told. He found the drawers and, peeling himself layer by layer, he realized how right the girl had been. With her tacit permission, he collapsed inwardly, taking a full 5 minutes to remove the trousers that seemed to have fused with his skin. When at last he'd changed, he lay on the floor by the wet pile of cloth, fell asleep, and dreamt. The dream was fragmented, the editor in his head jumping from scene to scene in search of cohesion. He was in a car, a bald man driving. He was wiry, with a smile that slid around his face to grin at the boy from his left cheek, while his head remained motionless to the front.
"Keep your eyes on the road."
Headlights dazzled him. A curse from the driver. The boy's hand on the door. The door opens, screeching tires, and then a tree. The door wrenched from his hand, flying and rolling and then running through the night. And soon he stood on a cliff top. The driver, his mouth back in place, the grin just as ugly. The mouth spoke, its head a pale moon. The words oozed like pus from his lips, floated across the night, and circled the boy's mind.
"Corvin! Corvin! Corvin!"
And then they stood together, a rock in the boy's hand. He swung it hard,
The arc ended on the pale moon, and the pale moon crumpled over the cliff, and the boy dropped the rock and stared at his bloodied right hand. When he awoke, he was wrapped in a blanket, lying on an old sofa, his legs overlapping the curved arm at the far end, his head cradled by the softest pillow in the universe. A fire crackled behind the safety of a wire guard, the direct heat on his face infusing his body, and for the first time since he could remember, which admittedly wasn't long, he felt happy to be where he was. To his left, Katriana huddled under a blanket too, her feet tucked up on the musty armchair, her covered knees touching her chin, her hair brushed, dry and shiny again. Slowly he turned his head to look around, trying at the same time not to waken her. They were in a room he did not recognize. There was no bed, no chest of drawers. He couldn't recall getting there, nor the lighting of the fire. Although there was still a sense of disuse about the cottage, with the two fires on the go, the warm blanket and the girl close by, the place, at that moment, was a cosy shelter from the storm that still raged outside. He was settling back to think about his situation, try to make sense of his fragmented thoughts, when he realized that the girl's eyes were opened and she was staring at him. He attempted a smile and suddenly felt awkward. How did I... You were cluttering the scullery. Very untidy, she said. They were silent for a while. The sound of crackling wood, the hypnotic effect of flame and heat, the storm shaking the cottage with each sudden gust. When at last she broke the spell, her words, innocently spoken, burrowed so deeply into his subconscious that he knew they held a fundamental truth that lay at the centre of who he was. You spoke in your sleep. Your name? Is it Tom Corvin? And it fit him perfectly. It felt right. Something profound lay at the heart of those words. He knew his name. Tom Corvin. He smiled at her. I think so. Yes, Tom Corvin. But with the acceptance of his name came the memory of his dream, and he thought of the blood on his hand when he first awoke at the base of the cliff. He remembered the rock, the brief jolt of the man's skull, and then the give as the weapon penetrated soft tissue, and the bald man crumpled over the cliff and died. He was Tom Corvin, indeed. Tom Corvin, the murderer. DreamWorks.com.